involved in fundraising one way or another. And for the last 12 years has been responsible full-time for the development department. Rod is a fully dedicated man who has the touch of God on his life. And that's evidenced by his integrity, which causes people to trust him and the navigators. Also, it's evidenced by the spiritual ministry that God continues to give him to literally thousands of people monthly. And as you'll see, it's also evident in the insights that God has given him in financing the Lord's work. There just is no other person better qualified to share the history of the Navigator fundraising and lessons learned than Rod Sargent. Now, that would be introduction enough, except for a very significant factor. 7 years ago, it was discovered that Rod had cancer. And after major surgery, a year of chemotherapy and prayer, it disappeared and recurred again last year. About 5 months ago, he had major surgery, and they were unable to remove an inoperable tumor. So since that time, he's been on chemotherapy, needs to take pain pills to sleep at night, and each night hooks himself up to a couple bottles that feeds him intravenously all night while he sleeps. Still, he comes to work each day, goes out on fundraising trips, and is here to speak to us this morning. And so I present to you a man of indomitable spirit, a true profile in courage, Rod Sargent.
Lauren's introduction reminds me of the story of the gentleman who was being introduced to bring a speech. And the MC went on and on and on and on and on about his world travels and the books he'd read and all of his accomplishments. And at last it was the speaker's turn to come to the podium. And so he said, "Well, folks," he said, "I just wish that my parents had been here tonight. My father would have been so proud, and my mother, she would have believed it all." Well, the financial folklore of the Navigators describes the highlights of how God has led us over the years relative to fundraising. And I want to share this with you, along with some of the lessons that we learned about fundraising during those early years. Remembering the days of old, as David often did, and as we're going to do for a few minutes this morning, we'll provide perspective and understanding. It will address the issue of why the Navigators raise money and help answer the question, why don't we just pray and ask God to supply our needs? Both the donors and NAV staff often wonder about this. Some time ago, a donor wrote asking, he said, and I'm quoting, "Where is your faith?" I'll tell you where it is. It's in your fundraising methods. You're looking to methods to supply your needs. That's why you send out financial appeals. All you really need is to trust God. Put your faith in Him instead of your fundraising techniques, and your needs will be met. Well, you know, the fact is that God provided for the financial needs of the Navigators in just exactly that manner for the first 15 years of our ministry. During that time, offerings were never taken. Solicitations were never made. As staff, we were instructed never to talk to non-staff people about financial needs. We weren't even to share prayer requests with them about financial needs. That was considered an oblique mention of needs. So a review of our financial folklore will show how God led us as an organization to change our policy from never making needs known to making them known. And a review of our financial folklore will also evoke, I believe, gratitude in our hearts for the good hand of God upon the ministry of the Navigators over the years. When I first joined the Navigator staff, our annual budget was less than $100,000. And I can remember occasions back in those days talking with people in the office about the fact that someday our budget would undoubtedly be as much as $1 million. And yet, this year's budget exceeds $40 million. And God has made all of this possible. He is the source of all that we receive financially. And we praise Him for His marvelous provision year after year in ever-increasing amounts. So I think as we talk about the old days, it will evoke a deep sense of gratitude to God. I'm reminded that back in those early days, when funds were available and they were not always available, but we who were on staff would receive our weekly salary of $2 a week when funds were available. And then later, a salary increase of almost 300% made us feel rich beyond belief at $7 a week. And this probably doesn't seem like an adequate income. But you know, I can't remember a single need that I had during those early years that God didn't meet. The office staff all lived together. We lived together in Dawson Trotman's home at 509 Monterey Road. I'm sure you've read about that. We took our meals there, and of course, with our housing needs and our food needs met, we didn't have a lot of extra needs. But whenever there was a need, God supplied it. And then, by the late 1940s, the Navigator Ministry had been functioning some 15 years. And during this time, our policy had been to make our needs known to God alone. And Dawson had adopted the policy of George Mueller, who simply prayed about needs and then waited for God to supply them. But beginning in the mid-1940s, organizational financial needs began to plague us. Income began to fall off. Bills began to accumulate, and when things reached a sort of a crisis mode, property was sold and the proceeds used to pay off indebtedness. Finally, Dawson decided that the Lord might be leading us to follow Paul's example in support. Paul supported himself through earned income. And we see this in five different locations in the New Testament. Acts 18, 3 is one. And as a result of this, the Navigators launched three projects that were aimed at generating funds that could be used for operational expenses. One of these was a radio store located in downtown Los Angeles. And this business was given the scintillating name Reliable Radio Repair. The second project consisted of an effort to sell fluorescent signs for advertising for small businesses, and this activity was named Superior Sign Service. And with such sensational names, how could either of these businesses fail? Third project was representing a Christian publishing house to all of the Bible bookstores and the religious bookstores west of the Mississippi. And this was how I became a navigator. This was my first function, to function as a traveling salesman or a traveling representative in the western half of the United States. And this job paid a salary plus expenses plus a commission. Well, it wasn't long before these three ventures were discontinued with the realization that God must have some other plan, some other solution in mind for the navigators. And it was about then that Dawson decided to share the financial struggles of the last two or three years with three longtime friends of the navigators. Hopefully God would give us some direction from their counsel. And the first of these was a businessman who, after listening to Dawson's explanation, said, "Well, Dawson, I've tried to talk with you about finances, but you wouldn't even discuss the subject with me." And I finally concluded there must be some well-to-do individual who was paying all the bills and who wished to remain anonymous. I'm delighted to know my help is needed. And I know others who've been helped by your ministry will feel the same way. The second person Dawson visited was a Mrs. Alexander Kerr, who was the president of the Kerr Glass Corporation in Los Angeles. And during Dawson's explanation of our financial struggles, tears began to trickle down Mrs. Kerr's face. And this was devastating to Dawson. Here he was violating a principle that he had set out to follow and had followed for many years. And so he began to apologize to Mrs. Kerr for whatever he had said that had offended her. And Mrs. Kerr responded by saying, "Dawson, you haven't offended me. These are tears of joy, as I realize now an organization that means as much to me as the navigators needs my help." And from that time on, Mrs. Kerr graciously and generously and regularly supported the ministry of the navigators. The third friend, also a businessman, also responded positively. And in addition, he shared a portion of scripture from 1 Kings 17, primarily verses 2 through 9. And here, as you'll remember, Elijah was required to change from not making his needs known to making his needs known. His initial instructions were to hide in the wilderness by the brook Cherith, and the ravens were to bring him bread and meat each morning and each evening, which they did. But as you know, he had prophesied a three-year drought, and as a result of the drought, the creek began to dry up. And new instructions arrived from the Lord, telling Elijah to make his needs known to a widow in Zarephath. Well, the counsel of these three friends, along with the scriptural precedent in 1 Kings 17, where God changed his method of provision for Elijah, enabled Dawson to seriously consider the possibility that God might be leading the navigators to change their policy from never making needs known to making them known. And not long after those interviews, a definite decision was made. God was leading the navigators to change and to begin to make our needs known. I think it's important for you to realize that as staff members, we did not want to do this. We were extremely reluctant. We felt not making needs known was certainly more spiritual, that certainly it was more honoring to the Lord. And looking back on the situation, I also now recognize that I, for one, was proud of the fact that the navigators didn't make their needs known. And now we had to change and become like everybody else. So with reluctance, and for the first time in Navigator history, a financial appeal was sent to all those on our mailing list. The response was not miraculous, but it was adequate to meet immediate needs. And during the next year and a half, two other financial appeals were sent to people on the mailing list. Intellectually, we felt convinced that God had led us to make needs known, but emotionally we were struggling, and consequently, needs were made known, but only after we had reached a crisis position regarding finances. Then in 1951, the Lord led us to launch our very first fundraising campaign. We had to do this because funds were needed to pay off the mortgage on the Los Angeles office building and on the Navigator home where Dawson lived at 509 Monterey Road. The name of this fundraising program was called Anchor Home Base. The financial goal was $51,000, and that to us was significant because it was almost equal to our annual budget. And so now we were faced not only with doing something we had never done before, but we were apprehensive about how our donors would respond to sitting down with many of them face to face, sharing a need and asking for financial help. And we were convinced that there would be much negative response. We just preconceived a negative response from them. Well, when the program had been completed, it was clear that God had blessed the overall effort. There had been almost no negative response, and the goal of $51,000 had been exceeded by 5%. And now, the dust had barely settled on that program when Dawson Trotman arrived home from a trip to Kansas City and announced to us the staggering project of the purchase of Glen Eyrie in 1953. That was 2 years later. And we had visited Glen Eyrie that summer as a staff, and we were excited about the possibility of using this facility. And the way this had come about was that Dawson was looking for property in the Colorado area. We wanted a place that could be used as a training center and as a conference center, and as an international and national office. And Dawson had looked at several pieces of property in this area, and also he had visited Glen Eyrie, but Glen Eyrie, in his mind, was larger than what the navigators needed, and it was certainly beyond our capabilities financially. But Dawson was involved in those days with the Billy Graham Crusades in helping them develop their follow-up program, and after visiting in Colorado Springs, he went to the next Graham Crusade, and he shared with Billy what he had seen here at Glen Eyrie, and he knew that the Graham Association was considering the possibility of beginning a Christian academy. Well, to make a long story short, the Graham Association decided that they would buy Glen Eyrie, and that eventually they would develop it into a Christian academy, but in the meantime, the navigators would use Glen Eyrie until we could find permanent facilities of our own. So we were delighted with this arrangement. The Graham Association paid $50,000 in option money on the property, and they began their fundraising activities. And then 6 weeks before the down payment was due, Billy Graham called this meeting in Kansas City and announced that God had clearly shown him that he was not to diversify his ministries, he was not to begin a Christian academy, but he was also as convinced that the navigators should have Glen Eyrie. So he turned to Dawson in the meeting and he said, "Will you accept the challenge of raising this money and purchasing Glen Eyrie?" And Dawson responded with a very positive yes. By that time, it was obvious to everyone that God had his hand on this property, in an unusual way. For instance, the owner, a Mr. George Strake, when he learned that the property was to be used for the Lord's work, he reduced the selling price from $5 to $300,000. Another evidence of God's working was that Mr. Strake was a prominent Catholic layman, known nationally, knighted by the Pope on the board of directors of Notre Dame University. And for him to have sold this property at any price to a Protestant organization back in the early 50s was remarkable. You have to remember that the climate or the feelings between Catholics and Protestants back in those days was not nearly as cordial as it is today. And this reduced price, along with numerous other evidences of God's hand, influenced Dawson to say yes. The Navigators would assume the responsibility to raise the down payment, $110,000, and accomplish that in 6 weeks. Today, this doesn't seem like very much. But if we were to put it in today's framework in terms of the size of our organization, that $110,000 was more than our annual budget in 1953. So if we were to do a similar thing in 1986, we would be looking at raising in excess of $40 million in 6 weeks. And it took us 3 weeks just to get ourselves organized, just to develop fundraising plans. And to print and produce fundraising materials. And at the end of 3 weeks, we literally had raised no money at all. And I remember how George Wilson, Billy Graham's business manager, called Dawson about that time, and he said, "Dawson, how's it coming?" He says, "You know, if you don't raise that money, we're going to lose our $50,000, and if you're not going to be able to do it, we'd like to know that right now, because we'll somehow get the balance of that money together and not lose our $50,000. And Dawson said, "Oh," he said, "we're going to make it." "Well, how much money do you have?" "Well," he says, "I don't know yet." But he says, "Don't worry." He said, things are going along beautifully." And George said, "Well, how come you don't know how much you have?" And Dawson said, "Well, we haven't opened the morning mail yet." And somehow he persuaded George that we were, in fact, going to make it. And about that time, we spread out as a staff and began traveling around the U.S. sharing this need. And as we shared it, God laid the project upon the hearts of people in a remarkable way. Everywhere we went, people were interested, and God gripped their hearts, and they gave. And, you know, the largest single gift was only $2,500, and the average gift was $25. And the people who had never heard of the Navigators responded and gave contributions, small contributions, but many, many, many people gave. A businessman in Southern California mortgaged his home in order to give a couple thousand dollars. One of the young ladies on our staff gave the money that she had been saving for her trousseau. Some servicemen borrowed money from their chaplain in order to have something to contribute by the deadline. And there were dozens and dozens of stories of sacrificial giving. So this was God at work in the hearts of people. Our staff in Japan told us, "Don't send us any money that comes in for us during the month of September, but take it all and put it in the Glenary Project." And since then, they told us that during that month, the amazing thing was that they were supplied so generously that month from local sources in Japan that they had more than normal instead of less. I was raising money in the Southeast and received instructions to meet Dawson Trotman in Houston for the signing of the papers on the day of the deadline. And when I arrived, of course, the first thing I asked Dawson was, "How are we doing?" "Well, it was 2 days before the deadline and we needed $40,000. That evening, we called the office and learned that day $22,000 had come in. That left us with $18,000 that we needed on the day of the deadline, September 29th. One of the businessmen in Houston became excited about what he saw God doing, and he told us the morning of the deadline, he said, I'm going to call a few friends, have them over to the club for lunch. And he said, whatever you need at lunchtime today, I will raise. So just before going to his luncheon, Dawson called the office in Los Angeles, and 10,000 had come in that morning. We went to the luncheon. Mr. Handkammer raised the 8,000 that we needed. Went back to his office in the afternoon, called the office again, and discovered that $8,000 had come in at the office. And I remember Dawson's chagrin in going in to see Mr. Handkammer to tell him, we don't need your money. And Mr. Handkammer said, well, it's a big project. And he said, you'll have lots of expenses. I want you to have the money, and you can use it any way you need. Well, the fascinating thing was that when we sat down to execute the papers and to sign the agreements, that an additional $5,000 was needed for fire insurance and an additional $3,000 in legal fees. So God very graciously provided the $118,000 instead of the $110,000. Each year, for 10 years after the down payment was made, we had a property payment of $27,000 due each fall. And each fall, God enabled us to raise that money and to make that payment in full and on time each year for 10 years. Now, we had learned various lessons from this experience, but not all of our financial problems were being resolved. We had effectively raised funds for an exciting project, but we had not yet learned how to effectively raise support for the day-to-day operations here at Glen Eyrie, for the office and the Glen and all. And for several years, we struggled, really struggled, with inadequate operational income. And then finally, in 1963, we faced our problem, and we launched a nationwide program of sharing the NAV vision and of making our needs known, asking people to support the Ministry of the Navigators. And in this instance, we asked each one for a monthly 3-year pledge. In those days, the Navigator Ministry was divided up into 13 regions. And we took one region at a time and went into that region and executed our program, our fundraising program. It took us 2 years to go through all 13 regions, but during that time, God enabled us to raise $6 million. It was raised for the needs of the field staff in the region and for operational needs and capital needs here at Glen Eyrie. And so now, for the first time in all those years, the work seemed to be on a very solid footing financially. A few years later, we helped plan and direct a nationwide fundraising program for Great Britain. The interesting aspect of this was that nothing like this had ever been done before in Great Britain, and John Stott advised us not to do it, and he said, if you try, he said, you will undoubtedly fail, because personal solicitation is an American fundraising method that would be repulsive to the British. But after months of prayer and thought, the American and the British staff in Great Britain felt God's leading, and we went ahead with the program. We trained staff in 5 key ministry cities throughout Great Britain, and we began to share the ministry and the vision of the Navigators, asking people personally for pledges and financial support. The response was positive. It was enthusiastic. There were almost no negative responses. Some people came to know the Lord through this program, which has always been true in our major fundraising campaigns, and the financial objective was reached. Also in 1973, the U.S. Navigators launched their 4th major fundraising effort, and this was known as Decade of Development, and funds were raised for operational expenses and also for capital needs. Some of you were around, and I see the recognition in your eyes of those days, and you were involved with us in helping raise that money. The goal was about $4 million, and this goal was also achieved, and the money was used to build Bighorn. We had to spend $250,000 bringing city water into Colorado Springs. They would not allow us to build any new buildings until that had been done. We made some improvements in the castle. We built a 10,000 down here, and we also built the U.S. headquarters office building that you're familiar with. But once again, we had launched a major effort, and God had blessed. So here's a summary of the major fundraising events over a 30-year period. 1949, God led the Navigators to change from never making needs known to making them known. 1951, Anchor Home Base was launched. 53, the purchase of Glen Eyrie, $118,000 raised in 6 weeks. From 54 to 64, annual property payments made on time and in full. 63 and 4, the National Development Program, over $6 million raised. 73, Program for Progress in Great Britain, also 73, Decade of Development. So that's a resume. That's our financial folklore. And I think you can see that God's hand has been very evident in these things, and that He has very graciously blessed and prospered the work of our hands. Let me mention a few of the lessons that we have learned from these experiences. For instance, we learned that making needs known was a biblical method of financial support that had both Old Testament and New Testament validation. One of the early evidences in the Old Testament was where God told Moses to build the tabernacle, and he said, secure the resources from the people. So he made the need known to the people, Exodus 35, and they gave so generously that he finally had to tell them he had enough not to bring any more. I've always thought that's what I'm living for. I'd be ready to be raptured if that ever happens in the Navigators. We recognized also that self-support was a valid principle for the support of a Christian ministry, whether it's an organization or an individual. And we see this Acts 18:3 and other places, Paul's example. We also recognized that another method of support for a Christian ministry is to ask no one but God. There's no verse, no particular verse that states this as a principle. But I think Philippians 4:19 might come as close as any. And then, of course, we learned some other lessons that didn't have to do with how we should be supported. But, for instance, I believe we learned that, generally speaking, God supplies the financial needs of NAV staff and the organization in direct proportion to the time and the energy and the prayer and the skill that is invested in making needs known. I think we learned that there are no quick, easy solutions for funding a ministry, that careful planning along with plenty of prayer and hard work are necessary. We cannot be successful in our fundraising without those ingredients. We learned that God can be honored and glorified through the method of making needs known. We learned that doing a thorough job in the ministry does not always ensure adequate funds. That making needs known and asking for financial support are often necessary. We learned that Navigator constituents enjoy sharing in the support of the Navigator ministry, and they like the encounter when it's done properly. They enjoy the encounter of being asked. And it makes them feel like they are a part of the Navigator ministry. And we have a tendency often to sort of hold people at arm's distance, and people feel like we're kind of exclusive. Well, when we can ask them and make them a part of our team through their prayer and financial support, they like that. We learned that a donor must be cultivated, he must be informed, he must be developed as a genuine friend of the organization, that it's much more important to get the individual than to get his money. We learned that fundraising efforts must always result in broadening the base of support. And we should always be on the lookout for new prospects and asking the Lord to put us in touch with people who would love to support this kind of a ministry if they only knew more about it. And we've seen this to be true over and over and over and over again. Wish we had time to tell you some of the stories. And we learned that the secret of fundraising, the three secrets of fundraising are: see people personally, and see people personally. Of the billions of dollars that are contributed each year in America, approximately 84% of the, I think, maybe the last year it was recorded, that would be 80, probably 84, about $64 billion was contributed toward charitable causes in America. And 84% came from individuals. About 5% approximately from foundations, 5% approximately from corporations, 5% from foundations. So those are some of the lessons that we learned.